my maybe. And is it just us, or is it just lust? We cross the line when the friendship ain't enough. And is it just us, or is it just lust? We cross the line when the friendship ain't enough. And maybe, maybe, you'll always be my maybe. Maybe, maybe, you'll always be my maybe. Maybe, maybe, you'll always be my maybe. Maybe, you'll always be my maybe. And maybe, maybe, you'll always be my maybe. Maybe, maybe, you'll always be my maybe. Maybe, maybe, you'll always be my maybe. Maybe, you'll always be my maybe.
For CJLO News, this is Ahmed Mushtahid. Mayor Valérie Plante announced earlier this week that the City of Montreal will launch a public awareness campaign to encourage employers to hire newcomers. The campaign will ensure the development of an inclusive organizational culture across the city, a step which would lead to inclusive non-discriminatory hiring practices. The $1.6 million program, funded under an agreement with the Provincial Immigration Department, will bring together business leaders from small, medium, and large companies to implement inclusive hiring strategies in the business community. The city organized a workshop in the multimedia district west of Old Montreal to discuss the reasons behind the exclusion of immigrants from the job market in Montreal and to come up with suggestions for the awareness campaign. In national news, Calgary-based Husky Energy has recently pleaded guilty to permitting the spill of 225,000 liters of diluted heavy oil to the North Saskatchewan River near Maidstone, Saskatchewan in July 2016, a leak which fouled the source of drinking water for thousands of people. The Crown withdrew other charges against Husky, including not immediately notifying authorities and not taking immediate remedies to prevent or counteract the effects of the spill. The damaged pipeline was allowed to restart in October 2016 after being repaired and inspected. The company carried out a cleanup which recovered 90% of the oil. However, according to a victim impact statement filed recently by three indigenous communities, the cleanup was inadequate and incomplete. Birds, fish, and wildlife still suffer the effects of oil contamination, and as a result, indigenous communities have lost traditional use of their land. Two Canadian women were rescued by Ghanaian police on June 12 after being abducted from the Royal Golf Club in the city of Kumasi, Ghana, early last week. Ghana's Information Ministry says national security operatives completed the rescue mission in the country's south-central Ashanti region. The ministry also revealed the identities of the suspects. One of the suspects may have been linked to a separate kidnapping case involving multiple Ghanaian girls. The two women, aged 19 and 20, had been volunteering for the Charity Youth Challenge International before they were kidnapped. Global Affairs Canada says it's providing assistance to the two women and their families, but did not provide any further details due to privacy concerns. To hear the newscast and learn more about the news team, visit cjlo.com/news.
I stumble to the kitchen, pour myself a cup of ambition, and yawn and stretch and try to come to life. Jump in the shower and the blood starts pumping. Out on the streets, the traffic starts jumping with folks like me on the job from 9 to 5. Working 9 to 5. What a way.
Hello, Gorgeous Divas. I don't know why I have to do that. Welcome back to Sparkling Introspection on CJLO 1690 AM. I am your host, the Golden Dragon, Erdine. Here we talk about anything that is concerning, confusing, and intriguing women. and also whatever I want, because this is my show and I can do whatever I want. Also, welcome back to everyone who listens to me on Thursdays, and I hope there are people who listen to me. Also, I was thinking, I feel like it's always raining on Thursday nights. Do you think so? Because every time I'm on the bus and coming here, it's always raining. And listen, I love rain. It's getting me in that mood. It's making me feel like I'm in some type of movie. And I'm sitting on the bus being all dramatic and stuff. But I know a lot of people don't like the rain. But also, I guess raining is good because people will be like, I don't want to go out. And they'll sit home and listen to me. Ha ha. I hope y'all listen to me. If you don't, that's fine. I respect your lifestyles and choices of listening stuff, but you should listen to me. Anyways, so last week I wasn't here. I played a rerun of the show. I was in Ottawa for work things, and let me tell you, Ottawa is just so whatever. Like, there's nothing there. I would never imagine myself moving to Ottawa. Like, you know, not for me. That's not for me. Anyways, I only like really two cities in Canada, which is Montreal and Vancouver. Toronto's too intense. Like, there's just a lot going on in Toronto, and I don't like it. You know, it's not cute. But yeah, anyways, life has just been coming at me these days, you know? You know, it's just like a lot going on, you know, especially in the past 2 weeks. Like, I was graduating, you know, doing a lot of things, but also like a lot of life stuff was happening. And it was like pretty shitty, but like not pretty in this sense, like, oh my God, my life is burning into ashes, but like shitty and like everything was happening so fast and you just haven't like no time to really like slow down, really process all the emotions you're feeling. And you know, I know how important processing your emotion is. But anyways, I didn't have any of that time. And you know, you just have to go on with life, and that's kind of sad. So last week I was like really emotionally absent, and I was just like, oh, what's happening? And I just kind of kept all of that at bay. But you know what? It wasn't kept away for a long time, because I ended up going to the washroom, and I was like super emotional, and I ended up crying in the washroom. But you know, I'm a Pisces, so that happens all the time. But I did cry in the washroom, and it was super dramatic. And then I came out and I looked flawless, because this bish, I said bish, okay, that's not swearing, wears waterproof makeup. So that quality, good Sephora stuff, you know. So I came out looking fine and no one noticed. And I was like, yay, happy. So, yeah, I still haven't had like a lot of chance to like process all of that. So I'm going to be like journaling, meditating and emotionally eating, you know, contemplative gazes and long walks. Yeah, so anyways, I don't know where I was going with that. I was just like updating y'all. I really hope y'all had a good week. I know the weather has been kind of cute, and I hope y'all been wearing your booty shorts and, you know, getting that sun tan on, you know, whatever y'all like to do in the sun. Yeah, so like I mentioned, I have recently graduated from university. I'm finally free from the shackles of education. Wow, what a privileged thing to say. But anyways, I've graduated and I am moving soon. End of an era, truly. I really have grown and blossomed in Montreal, you know. I feel like I'm a botanical garden right now, you know, just filled with flowers and like tulips and gardens and like little man-made lakes, you know. And it really took a hot minute to build all of this and like grow my bush. That was funny. Yeah, so it does feel a little discouraging to be moving away, knowing I have to build my botanical garden from a scratch again. But like, I feel like over the past few years, I learned how to fertilize. So if anything, even though I'll be building up my garden from scratch, I know gardening this time around, you know, so it won't be so bad. I mean, that's what I'm telling myself, you know, to be like, to delude myself from reality. But yeah, I mean, I guess the only thing university taught me was to use metaphors to describe my life turmoils. But I think a botanical garden is a great way to describe my life. Yeah, so in the process of building my garden, I witnessed and visited many other beautiful gardens in my life. Gardens meaning people, okay? People, friends, whatever. But I'm going to stop using metaphor language because that's weird. Over the past few years, I've met many friends, worked alongside many, many truly wonderful people. And I shouldn't be surprised that most of those people were female because women rock. I have just such amazing friends who support, love, and care for me. And truly everything that I do with pride and love, knowing I have them by my side, that I'm walking side by side with one of the most baddest bitches. That's not a swear word, okay? Out there, you know? Like, I have so much pride in my friend group and my, like, family. Oh, it's crazy! Anyways, there's so much love, you know? I love them so much. And I'm so grateful that I know them, you know? Because I honestly wouldn't be who I am today if I did not have any of that. So, all this to say, I really want to encourage y'all to take a look around you. Look at your friends. Ask them how they're doing. And really listen, you know? We know we love our friends and fam, but we need to show them love, you know. And it's great to be like, MJ, I love you. But it's also super important to show them, like, the love, you know. And showing love doesn't mean, like, buying them food, like, complimenting them, like, oh, girl, you look so good in those jeans. Or, like, girl, you're radiating. Or, like, you're a goddess diva. But, I mean, being called goddess diva always helps. But, like, showing love, it's about listening to them, supporting them, you know. Sometimes they call you and, like, they're distressed, you know. Their boss is being poopy. And you just gotta be like, girl, let me listen to you, you know. You know, like, really be there. And don't think about yourself there. Don't think, what can I do for you? Just listen. You're a blank wall. Active listening. Thank you to my boss who put me through an active listening workshop. Thank you very much. But yeah, like, support them because life is really hard. And it's sometimes it's really hard to vocalize exactly what you're going through. Just, you know, be aware that life is hard and your friends may put on, like, the bravest face. They may not be going through anything, but they may just want to, like, talk about lovers or, you know, that kind of stuff. Just be there to listen to them, understand them, you know? Give them the space, the platform to shine, you know? Give them the necessary tools and the knowledge to flourish. You know, fight for each other. Share your wealth, physical and otherwise, because you know we all don't have that kind of money. I mean, I don't, but whatever. They will really remember that, you know? They'll look at you and be like, I love that. I love that. My friend is that bitch. She loves me. No, that's the kind of feeling you want to leave someone with, you know? That's how you should feel. But, I so got off track singing about some stupid stuff. Anyways, so when I was writing this, like, little spiel, you know, I was like, oh my God, I love everyone. I was thinking about some of my friends who, like, really helped me put my foot on the ground and, like, become who I am today. And I just want to give a little shout out to my friend Max, Maximilian. I met Max when I first moved into my first apartment when I moved to Montreal. And I honestly had nothing. I didn't have a bed. I didn't have bed sheets. I literally had one suitcase and that is it. Okay, baby golden dragon 13 was not blossoming at that time. I was a true nomad. So I moved into this new place and I don't know anybody and I'm quite antisocial. And I went into my room and, like, had no bed. I was, like, lying in my clothes, like, thinking about what am I going to do with my life? And then Max, like, knocked on my door and then, like, she was just, like, talking to me and asking about stuff and she was so sweet. And then she offered me her air mattress, which I slept on for, like, 2 months. Thank you, Max. And then without even asking me, she made me a bomb, bomb, bomb grilled chicken sandwich on her George Foreman grill. Let me mention the George Foreman grill because that grill is good. She just made me the sandwich and we sat in my very empty room talking about life and such. And honestly, I just, it really touched me and it really helped me when I needed it, you know. And I never really forgot, you know. And I truly started from the bottom, and I'm not at the top yet. But all along the way, my friends were patting me on the back, holding my hands when necessary, you know. So I really appreciate that. Thank you, Max. Thank you, Mama Max. I love you. Unfortunately, you know, life has a really sad way of reminding you how short it is. So take the time to find your passion, however long that may be. Listen to yourself, your little belly, you know. Listen to your loved ones. What can you do for each other to lift each other up? It's not about us rising alone, you know, but together. You know, highlighters on Fleek together, you know. Side by side, walking like the fierce, gorgeous divas that we all are, you know? And there will be failures, y'all. There will be trials and obstacles. But you just gotta kick them out of the way, shed a few tears, and move on with your life, you know? My graduating motto is, enough napping and crying, let's fight, okay? And I'm not just gonna fight for myself, I'm gonna fight for all my people, but only people that I like, okay? But I want to tell you all, everyone who's listening, that you're thriving and you're doing amazing, sweetie. You know, and you define your amazing. You know, don't let others sell you. However you want to be amazing, you do your amazing, you know. So I hope as you're listening, you feel your big dick energy grow, you know. You are all of that. Go hug yourself. Yes, you are a gorgeous superstar diva. And there is truly no one like you. You are a cheetah, a tiger, a lion, a giraffe, a goat. Okay? So, yeah. Feel that power. I really feel like that. I have such high self-confidence, like self-love. Every morning I wake up, I'm like, yes, you're the best. Yeah, anyways. And when people like insult me, I'm like shocked. I'm like, oh my God, you don't love me? Anyways. Yeah, so I hope we're all feeling super hype, you know, if we're feeling the positive love. And all of that long, like, ceremony type of stuff was really leading into today's episode. And today's episode is on Spectacular Woman. Women who are impactful, women who have been doing amazing things and making shit happen. And I compiled a cute little list of a few women, and I want to tell you all about them. Because I don't care if they're well-known, okay? I mean, I tried to find people who are like not well-known, but we need to give the space and the platform to let the world know how amazing women are and how much they're making shit happen, okay? Anyways, so it will be a super cute and light show, but first we need to take a little break, you know, get them ads playing, and after that I'll play a cute song to get us in the mood, so, you know, don't go anywhere. Oh, yeah, you're listening to Sparkling Introspection on CGLO 1690 AM, and I'm gonna play y'all Nina Simone, you know, because Nina Simone is real cute, and she's my favorite, and I love her, I'm so obsessed with her. So this is Nina Simone, For Woman. And I'll play it right after a little ad.
Come out to Casa del Popolo on Friday, June 14th for a night of raw and riotous Montreal punk that you won't want to miss. Featuring Lemon Grab, Mundy's Bay, and Dish Pit. Doors are at 8:30 and tickets are $10 in advance, $13 at the door. For tickets and more information, check out SuoniPerIlPopolo.org. This is a Suoni Per Il Popolo and Transistor Sister co-presentation. Is this thing on?
Join me, Allison, every Wednesday at 11 a.m. on Transistor Sister, where I play the songs that are stuck in my head so then they can get stuck in yours. The best in alternative punk, indie, with a sprinkling of pop, only on CJLO 6090 a.m.
My hair is woolly. back is strong, strong enough to take the pain inflicted again and again. What do they call me? My name is Aunt Sarah. Yellow. My hair is long. Between two worlds, I do belong. My father was rich and white. He forced my mother late one night. What do they call me? My name is Sophronia. My name is Sophronia. My skin is tan, my hair is fine, my hips invite you, my mouth like wine. Whose little girl am I? Anyone has money to buy? What do they call me? My name is Sweet Thing. My name is Sweet Thing.
Was amazing. I mean, also welcome back to Sparkling Introspection on CGLO 1690 AM. But also, are you also speechless like me? Every time I listen to Nina Simone, I feel speechless. I feel amazed and proud that I live in the world where Nina Simone existed and lived and breathed on. Oh my God, I love you so much, Nina. Okay. So, fangirling, O-V-E-R. So, like I said, welcome back. Before the break, that was Nina Simone, Four Women. We were talking about spectacular women and how this episode is going to be dedicated to them. So, the first woman, as you may have guessed, is Nina Simone. I truly love her. So, Nina I select her because I'm obsessed with her, but aside from that, she's truly an amazing activist, artist, whatever. During her life and career, she spoke out against racial inequality very frequently, and she performed and attended many protests, and then she wrote a lot of songs dedicated to protests during the civil rights movements. And a lot of, in her books and documentaries, she has often said that because of her deep involvement with the civil rights movement, a lot of music executives and music record labels punished her by not giving her shows, etc., etc. But I'm not sure if there's truth to it, but I honestly don't doubt it because people are super shitty. But Nina Simone was. She was classically trained on the piano, and she worked at a jazz bar, I think. So she got famous, and then she did a bunch of stuff. She did a lot of covers. She worked very closely with her lyricist, and then they made amazing songs together. Y'all probably know a lot of the songs that she sang, I Put a Spell on You, Cinnamon, Fever, I Love You, Porgy, etc., etc. But I'll be focusing in about her civil rights movement era and the songs that she created there. So the first time she addressed racial inequality in the United States was in the song Mississippi Got 'Em. And this was her response to the 1963 murder of Medgar Evers and the September 1963 bombing of the 16th Street Baptist Church in Birmingham, Alabama, in which four young black girls were killed and the fifth was partially blinded. And then the song Mississippi Got 'Em, she said it came to her, quote, in a rush of fury, hatred, and determination, unquote. And after the assassination of Martin Luther King, Simone recorded the song Why? The King of Love is Dead. And she was a neighbor of Martin Luther King Jr. And although she had different views on the civil rights movement at that time from Martin Luther King Jr., she still loved and appreciated everything that he was doing for the movement. From what I read, Nina Simone's take on the civil rights movement was she was more closely aligned with Malcolm X's view, and she had no problem having violent confrontation. She was like, yes, let me bring it to you, And I truly love that. I love a bad bitch who can, take power. And also another one of her famous songs is called To Be Young, Gifted and Black. And this is also one of her very popular songs that speak about, the prejudices that young black people face, especially young women face. And this song was inspired from a play that her friend playwright Lorraine Hansberry wrote. And I think it was an unfinished play. So Nina Simone and her composer friend or something, they got together and wrote the song. And it's one of the most famous songs that Nina has to this day. And I truly love her. And Nina, towards the end of her life, she had her life wasn't picture perfect. And I think she went through a lot of stuff, and she went on a self-imposed exile to Liberia, Barbados, and France. And she passed away in France from, breast cancer. But before that, she continued to release lots of music, and she wrote an autobiography. And there are a bunch of amazing documentaries on Nina. And I really find Nina Simone such a compelling character. Because when you see Nina Simone and when you listen to her music, you cannot help but feel some type of way. I've never experienced an artist that when I listen to her, I'm just literally a well of emotions just comes rising up. And I feel like she's right there beside me. Maybe that's just me, but I think Nina Simone is just a really powerful artist. And I heard that she, a lot of the times in the media, she's like, yeah, she had lots of outbursts. She was uncontrollable, whatever. But that's because people and society can't handle strong women. But Nina Simone apparently shot a music executive because she thought that he was stealing her royalties. And she told people, "I shot to kill, but I missed." I mean, if that's not big dick energy, I don't know what is, you know? Truly. Props to you, Miss Nina Simone, and thank you for gifting us with some beautiful music. That was, I'm feeling like Jean Raphael from Parks and Rec, so if I periodically start singing, please forgive me, because I'm feeling kind of like crazy. Yes, so I love Nina Simone, obsessed with Nina Simone, and there are some really cool like playlist remixes of her songs. There's a playlist on Spotify called Electro Jazz, and they do this amazing remixes of like very popular classic songs, and Nina Simone is heavily featured in that. And I swear to God, y'all, I listen to that every day. I found it and I haven't stopped listening to it since. They do a really good rendition of Cinnamon and Fever, and I know those are like the most overplayed songs, but listen, there's no such thing as listening too much to Nina Simone. Sorry, I cannot speak at all. Okay, so the next person that I would like to talk to y'all about is Audre Lorde. Do y'all know Audre Lorde? I'm going to give you a second. Okay, I'm going to continue. I first heard about Audre Lorde when I was researching for the episode on self-care. And, like, I was looking into how, like, self-care was such a radical movement that was started by women of color because they had no choice but to take care of themselves because, you know, systematic oppression and just hospitals and stuff didn't take care of her, didn't take care of people, you know? So, yeah. And I like, when I was researching for the self-care episode, I stumbled onto, like, some quotes and poetry that Audre Lorde had been writing, and I was like, ooh, amazing, I love. I wanted to include her on this list because I was looking into her, and she's truly amazing. She's radical. So she was an American writer and an activist, and she wrote a lot of poetry. And a lot of her work discussed racial inequality, social injustices, and intersectionality in feminism. And she also wrote a lot about, like, lesbian rights and, like, you know, that LGBTQ movement. A lot of what she wrote and spoke about is still so relevant and important today because I think intersectionality in many, like, activist movement is such a secondary thought, and I often find, like, the most, like, the people with the most power, privilege often shine brighter and speak louder than a lot of people because they have been given the best tools. And oftentimes, especially in feminism, those are white women. And I find it incredibly frustrating, even to this day, that, like, in a movement such as feminism, intersectionality isn't as big of a part as it should be. I mean, it's changing now, but, like, it's taking forever, you know. And, I mean, it's kind of annoying. But, she, like, over the course of her career, she has published more than 10 books. Honestly, I'm sure there's more. And, like, founded a bunch of organizations and started movements. And, She did a lot of work on, like, theory. And so her, like, discourse on feminism and intersectionality is still being studied by scholars to this day. And she's considered one of the most important people, in poetry, in, like, African American woman, lesbian woman's history, etc., etc. I want to play a short clip of Audre discussing being a black lesbian in the 50s. And I just really like it, you know. And I think y'all need to listen to her voice, you know, remember it.
The women I ran with, we knew we were outsiders. We knew we were outside the pale. lived in the village. We were outsiders. We were dykes, right? A lot of us were artists. We hated typing, right? We didn't want straight jobs. Whatever we did, we were at the fringe. Now, this, of course, was the 50s. It was like the gay girls' version of the beatniks. You have to remember that the lesbian gay girls, because that's what we would call the gay girls population, was a reflection of what else was going on, right, around us. And that was the era of let's pretend this is the best of all possible worlds. This is exactly what we choose, right? And this is it. So, like, nobody talked about racism.
Right. So if something happened to me in a bar, I couldn't count on anybody standing up and covering my back. A white lesbian would not stand up to cover my back. They may say, personally, oh, isn't that too bad it happened to you? But not, hey, this shouldn't happen, period.
You need to begin with a movement, which is what Black Power and the Civil Rights Movement was. Then, immediately within it, you are going to get those people whose differences are not being articulated, which is, right, us. So then there is immediately another step.
All right, so that was Audre Lorde discussing what being a black lesbian was like in the 50s, and also like how white feminism failed them and continues to fail a lot of women of color, you know? And it's just, yeah, I could go on about feminism and the lack of intersectionality, because a lot of the times in especially in white feminism, people do not understand their privilege, you know? And it's one thing to say, oh, I understand my privilege. Oh, I'm a white woman. I have white privilege. But it's another thing to take those words and put it into action. How can you use your privilege to better someone's life, you know? How can you use your privilege to help someone who doesn't have the same amount of privilege as you and, you know, improve someone's life and stand together with your people, you know? If you truly are a feminist, you really need to consider all these, because unless you, you know, consider intersectionality and you really use it in your life, you're not a feminist. I said it. Okay, so let's go back to Audre Lorde. So Audre, interesting fact, she dropped her name is spelled A-U-D-R-E, but initially it was spelled with an Y, but then she took it out because she was like, I'm too cool for that. So in high school, she published her first poem in 17 magazine. Oh, how you've fallen from grace, 17. Now all you talk about is useless exercise for teen girls. Perpetuate terrible body image issues. Okay, anyways. So she did a lot of studies, and she studied to be a librarian. So she went to Hunter College, and then she did like a bunch of other universities, and she was a writer in residence. So during her time, she led a lot of workshops with young black undergraduate students, and they, you know, had discussions of like civil rights issues and like what being a young black person was at that time. And in 1981, Lorde was one of the founders of the Women Coalitions of Sainte Croix, an organization dedicated to assisting women who've survived sexual abuse and intimate partner violence. And in the late 80s, she also helped establish the Sisterhood in Support of Sisters, SISA, in South Africa to benefit black women who were affected by apartheid and other forms of injustice. Listen, Lorde was busy, okay? Lorde was busy. And like I mentioned, she really valued, I mentioned that she like led workshops with young black undergraduate students. Throughout her career, like, it's really clear that she mentored a lot of people in her lifetime, whether they were like activists or like people in her community. She really took the time to like, you know, give out her knowledge and, you know, like expertise, you know? So taking that kind of like mentoring type of situation that she had going on, and all of this, while all of this happening, she was writing amazing poetry. Okay. So she went to Berlin and spent a lot of time in Berlin, and basically gave life to the Afro-German movement. And there she was kind of like the backbone of mobilizing and organizing the Afro-German women there and, you know, giving them the tools and like encouraging them to speak out. And a lot of the times in history that Audre Lorde's like big involvement and influence in that movement is kind of ignored, which is frustrating. You know, women of color always get thrown under the bus while mediocre white men get all the fame and glory, whatever. Anyways, so Lorde, I mentioned Nina Simone was really into like the direct, you know, approach of like, just let's get it over with. You know, I'll shoot you if I can. But Lorde believed that instead of fighting systemic issues through violence, she thought that language is a more powerful form of resistance and really encouraged the women in Germany to speak up instead of fighting back. She has published a bunch of books. Some of them are First Cities. First Cities was her first volume of poems. And then Cables of Rage, From a Land Where Other People Live, and 76. Oh, I think that's 76. And then one of her most well-known poetry volume is called Coal. And Coal was really the poetry volume that sprung her into fame. And, you know, like everyone was like, oh my God, Audre, amazing poet, you're talented, you know. I mean, she was talented way before that, but they were sleeping on her. She also wrote like a bunch of proses, and she published like an autobiography type of thing called The Cancer Journals. And this largely was just like her journaling taken from her private collection. And it talked about her journey of having cancer and going through that and being a mother, being a black woman, you know, just all types of like her identity. And then she also has another book called Zami, A New Spelling of My Name. So she has released a few names, you know. And in another book called Age, Race, Class, and Sex, Woman Redefining Difference, Lorde talked about the importance of educating others. And however, she stresses that in order to educate others, one must first be educated. Empowering people who are doing the work does not mean using privilege to overstep and overpower such groups, but rather privilege must be used to hold the doors open for other allies. And she describes the inherent problems with society by saying, quote, "Racism, the belief in the inherent superiority of one race over all others, and thereby the right to dominance. Sexism, the belief in the inherent superiority of one sex over the other, and thereby the right to dominance. Ageism, heterosexism, elitism, classism," end quote. And she oftentimes described herself as having been one of these like defiant groups in society, and which set the tone for like a lot of the status quo and what not to be in society, you know, because I'm guessing the 50s was a really shitty time for people of color, especially black women, you know. And I really want to read this quote about self-identity from her book, The Cancer Journals, and quote, "If I didn't define myself for myself, I would be crunched into other people's fantasies for me and eaten alive," end quote. I mean, that's a really, like, I really hope y'all, like, dissect that and reflect on that quote. Because I always say this, like, it's super important to learn who you are and value yourself before you go out into the world and, you know, interact with people and all that stuff. Because we can be so easily influenced by others, you know, and that shouldn't be a thing. So, yeah. So to wrap up the Audre Lorde segment, I want to read a poem by her. And I really enjoyed this. And this is a poem that I often find myself going back to when I'm just like, you know, being frustrated by life and society and terrible oppression that we face. Okay, so this poem is called Power by Audre Lorde. The difference between poetry and rhetoric is being ready to kill yourself instead of your children. I'm trapped on a desert of raw gunshot wounds and a dead child dragging his shattered black face off the edge of my sleep. Blood from his punctured cheeks and shoulders is the only liquid for miles, and my stomach churns at the imagined taste while my mouth splits into dry lips. Without loyalty or reason, thirsting for the wetness of his blood as it sinks into the whiteness of the desert where I am lost. Without imagery or magic, trying to make power out of hatred and destruction, trying to heal my dying son with kisses, only the sun will bleach his bones quicker. A policeman who shot down a 10-year-old in Queens stood over the boy with his cup shoes and childish blood, and the voice said, "Die, you little mofo." And there are tapes to prove it. At his trial, this policeman said in his own defense, "I didn't notice the size, nor nothing else, only the color." And there are tapes to prove that too. Today, that 37-year-old white man with 13 years of police forcing was set free by 11 white men who said they were satisfied justice had been done, and one black woman who said they convinced me, meaning they dragged her 4x10 black woman's frame over the hot coals of 4 centuries of white male approval until she let go, the first real power she ever had, and lined her own womb with cement to make a graveyard for our children. I have not been able to touch the destruction within me, but unless I learn to use the difference between poetry and rhetoric, my power too will run corrupt as poisonous mold, or lie limp and useless as an unconnected wire, and one day I will take my teenage plug and connect it to the nearest socket, raping an 85-year-old white woman who is somebody's mother. And as I beat her senseless and set a torch to her bed, a Greek chorus will be singing in 3/4 time. Poor thing, she never hurt a soul. What beasts they are. That was Power by Audre Lorde. And I know, like, sometimes listening to poetry, like, hearing it isn't enough. So if y'all really need to, I really recommend looking into Audre Lorde's stuff. She writes so beautifully and the imagery is so alive, and I truly, truly, truly love her. So we have one more woman, but we're gonna take a little quick break. And I also have a quick song to play too. And this is a Mongolian song that I will play after the break. And it's by a singer called Baysarlang. And it's, I think the song, I don't know how to translate it from Mongolian, but she was really popular in the early 2000s. And basically the song is about like a child's yearning for their mother and just expressing the bond, the love there exists between a mom and a child. I used to really love this song, and I used to sing it to my mom all the time. So it's a really sweet song, but yeah, so don't go anywhere. Get a glass of water. We have a short commercial break, and then we will listen to Baysarlang's song, and then we'll be back. Okay, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to Sparkling Introspection on CJLO 69 AM, and we'll be right back.
The Saint-Amboise Montreal Fringe Festival allows for more than 500 local, national, and international artists to cross paths. They can explore unknown artistic territories in theater, music, dance, and visual arts. Discover the biggest bilingual art party Montreal has to offer with a 3-week festival featuring over 800 shows. May 27th to June 16th, Montreal's Plateau neighborhood will be buzzing with excitement for the 29th edition of the festival. Hashtag Fringe Buzz.
Isn't laughing fun? Here at What's Funny, Wednesdays from 5 to 6 p.m., if you like comedy, talking about comedy, or talking about people who talk about comedy, then this show's for you.
What's the deal with
what's funny? Thanks, personal friend of mine, Jerry Seinfeld. We've got comedians, we've got people who just happen to be funny, and we've got me, your host, Steven. So tune in every Wednesday from 5 to 6 here on CJLO 1690.
Welcome back to Sparkling Introspection on CJLO 1690 AM. This is Ardeen, and we're discussing Spectacular Woman. And y'all just heard a Mongolian song called Botonidu by Baisalang. I think it's, like I mentioned, it's just about, like, loving moms, I think. And this is not, like, popular, like, pop Mongolian songs. It's just, like, it's like a genre that I don't even know how to explain. It's like countryside song. It's Mongolian country music. So I was really obsessed with her. And she's a great singer. And I love her, you know. We don't have a lot of time left. And we still have one spectacular woman that I would like to discuss. So I'm just going to jump right back in. Okay? So the next woman I would like to talk about is Henrietta Lacks. And y'all may have heard about Henrietta Lacks. Because the story of Henrietta Lacks was the center of a very popular book by an author named Rebecca Skloot. And this book is actually really great. I read it when I was in third year of university. And I really enjoyed it. And I was so heartbroken and I cried. And we had a very heated debate in class because some white people were spewing bullshit. And I had to put them in their place, you know. Anyway, so I read the book of Henrietta Lacks and I was deeply disturbed and angry while reading her story. She was so mistreated and used by the hospital. And Henrietta Lacks was born in 1920, but she passed away from cervical cancer in 1958. So I think in like 1958, early 51, she discovered a knot in her womb and she went to the hospital and she discovered this knot. And when she went to the hospital, she was pregnant with her fourth child. And the doctor's like, yeah, you're pregnant, whatever. And then she was like bleeding. And then she went to the doctor again after giving birth to her child. And then the doctor, the hospital was like, you have a like malignant tumor or something. So they're like, it's fine. Don't worry. They like sent her out. And then this was also during time of segregation. Okay, y'all, because the white people were openly hateful back then. Henrietta Lacks went out, and then, like, at this point, she's a mom of four kids, okay? So she went out, and then, like, her condition became worse and worse and worse. She went to the hospital a few times, but they kept, like, misdiagnosing her and releasing her. So she came back to the hospital, and then they, like, discovered she had cancer. So then they took a sample of her, like, cell tissue from, like, examining her. And the doctor, like, didn't tell her any of this stuff, okay? Because doctors are terrible, I guess. And so Henrietta's cancer got really, really bad. And she was treated with, and this was really wild to learn about this, radium tube inserts. And in the book, the author describes Henrietta's body when Henrietta passed away as just being, like, all black, because the radium had just like burned and destroyed her body. And at that point, her cancer, because I guess, like, honestly, I think the doctor and the hospitals were just super shitty and they misdiagnosed her and like didn't take her seriously. So her cancer spread and she unfortunately passed away. And at the time of her passing, like, they didn't allow her kids to come up and they like tied Henrietta to her bed. So damn cruel, okay? So the interesting thing is, so they basically kind of killed her. And after Henrietta passed away, her cells were not dead. Actually, her cells were popping, okay? They were shaking the medical world. So a lot of people, if you all are like biology students or if you know about science and stuff, you may have heard about the HeLa cells. They're spelled H-E-L-A. So the HeLa cells are actually Henrietta Lacks' cells that the doctor stole from her body without her consent or consulting her or informing her. The HeLa cells, they were the first immortal human cell chain, I think. And they basically helped change the world, okay? Y'all, Henrietta Lacks, the HeLa cells changed, okay? So the Henrietta cells became this huge, huge, huge business. And even today, I like in the book, they were saying that I don't think there's one lab that doesn't contain a HeLa cell. And like this is when they like start patenting stuff. And then, you know, those like swirly thingies that they make blood, like you see in CIA stuff, you put the blood tube in and it swirls. Like those are created because the doctors were experimenting on the HeLa cells. So the HeLa cells were used in wide variety of things. And then because this was the first human immortal cell, people were super excited and they could really do a lot of research. And thanks to HeLa, our lives truly, truly improved. In 1954, this scientist, I think, called Jonas Salk, was using the HeLa cells in his research to develop the polio vaccine. And he did it. So to test his new vaccine, the HeLa cells were mass-produced in the first ever cell production factory. And then he, like, tested it, and then he saw, like, how would it react. And then, so this doctor called Chester Southam, he's, like, a virologist. I don't know what a virologist is. But he injected the